The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Life is a workout. And Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox have now dropped two in a row to the Philadelphia Phillies. They lose tonight 4-1. Christopher Sanchez pitches a complete game against this team. For those of you who tuned in last night, we pretty much called it. This is exactly how we thought this game was going to go. This is kind of how predictable this team is. The offense doesn't show up. Richard Fitz doesn't pitch exactly great. And once again, catcher's interference comes into play, which two nights in a row, I don't know how you make that happen, but the 2025 Red Sox, they make it happen. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry and Mark. Guys, again, Mark, you were on the show with me last night. We pretty much broke it down, you know, looking at Christopher Sanchez, looking at the matchup, how this lineup has been going. Pretty much went how we thought. So what were your initial thoughts about just watching the game and just how it all went down, especially that those first couple innings with Fitz and the interference and all that?
Well, first of all, besides the interference, it was such a bizarre call, including like it was a balk interference, which I've never heard of that in all my time. And it's such a confusing play because you got a guy breaking for home and you're supposed to let the batter, you know, have his chance to make contact with the ball. But the batter jumped out of the way as soon as he saw Harper coming. You know, Merlone talked about this, you know, on the broadcast. I mean, he didn't touch the runner. He didn't step, you know, when they say step in front of the plate, do they mean like literally the front of the plate or in front of Harper trying to score? Is trying to wrap my mind around it. It was pretty confusing, but you know, I was listening to a little sports radio today and, you know, they were kind of saying the same thing about like this catcher's interference thing. This is now a systemic problem for the Red Sox. This is like, you know, they're not, it's happening too much, which means is it being taught? And I know that wasn't one where he's just catching the ball and the guy hits his glove, right? But even that one was weird because it was a check swing, right? So I'm just puzzled by the whole thing, but it set the tone, didn't it, for basically everything we said yesterday, which Sanchez was going to come out. He was going to induce ground balls. What was it? 11 ground balls, I think. And then he had one, ground ball that was a fielder's choice. So it played out. He was masterful. And the thing is about him too, is that, I mean, I'm sure you guys noticed this, is he goes really deep into counts and he just, I don't think he had a walk today, right? I mean, if he gets out of it, even when he goes deep into counts. So actually, it was fun to watch him, to be honest with you. That was like probably the best part of the game, unfortunately.
So what's worse with that whole scenario is the fact that it may have been catcher's interference. Is that the worst thing? Is it worse that maybe it was a balk, or is it worse that Bryce Harper essentially straight up stole home plate? Because for me, it's number three.
Yeah, I mean, he was safe regardless, but the balk interference moved the other runners up. Like, it's not just that he stole home, it's that the other runners advanced too. It was so Red Sox, like, it hurt tonight with that.
And, you know, for that particular play, I was stuck in traffic, so I was on the WEI broadcast, and they pointed out that he was in the windup for that particular play instead of pitching from the stretch. So why was he in the windup? I mean, I get it. Bryce Harper is not exactly fleet of foot anymore. He never really was. He was never a speedster, but at least in his 20s, he could steal 15, 20 bags a year if he wanted to. He's not that anymore, but why are you pitching out of the windup when Philly made it clear early on they wanted to run on you? And they were. They were running all over Fitz. Nick Castellanos stole a base against you tonight. That should never happen.
Same inning as the Harper.
Right.
Home. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, again, I was listening to the radio, but Fleming said he caught it by a mile. Like, he was safe by a mile. So it was clear that they wanted to run on you and they were going to be aggressive. And you've got a guy on third, you know, and you're going to pitch out of the windup. That just doesn't make any sense. So to me, I put it more on Fitz than I do Narvaez, because I think Narvaez did everything he could on that play. I think Fitz was just out to lunch, you know, early on to start that game. He wasn't holding runners. It turned into a track meet. He was giving up bombs early on. Like, I just think he wasn't quite ready to go. Now, was it the worst start we've seen? No, of course not. We've seen a lot worse. He only gave up 4 runs against a pretty good Philly offense. But I just feel like he wasn't sharp early on. And that decision to pitch out of the windup when you've got a runner on third and a team that clearly wants to run on you, that just didn't make any sense to me.
Another thing that we're going to be confronted with here is, you know, we wrestle back and forth. Should we go all in for a top end starter? Alex Speer on tonight's Nesson broadcast said perhaps none of those guys will be available, and he's probably right. I mean, as in the last 4 or 5 years, as each trade deadline has come and gone, you don't really see controllable ace level pitchers moved anymore. Those types of blockbuster deals don't happen. The Twins are also, I don't know, they're playing better baseball than they had been. We've seen Cinderella stories in the second half. We did last year with Detroit. So perhaps they'll be even less motivated to move a guy like Joe Ryan at the deadline versus this winter. The Twins always seem to identify value. I mean, Pablo Lopez was a good pitcher, but the Twins turned him into a great pitcher. And they just seem to do that. And they got Joe Ryan in the Nelson Cruz trade to the Rays. I want to say that was in 2019. Don't quote me. But yeah, so I don't know if that guy's going to be available, but Fitz's spot is the most vulnerable right now, especially with Buehler seemingly figuring it out. I wasn't on last night's show, but I mean, very encouraging that Buehler could hang with that offense and give you a chance to win. Fitz tonight, you know, was kind of a short outing. He didn't get killed, but he's not a guy that I think we can rely on going down the stretch here.
Well, yeah, and I think they, you know, they took Fitz out when all the big thumping lefties were coming in. You know, I don't think Cora had much confidence in his ability to, I'm not sure what that must have been, maybe the third time are on the lineup for them, I would say. So I think he was like, nah, we're going with the lefties with this one.
Yeah, Fitz is absolutely the guy. If they do go out and decide that starting pitching is their priority, they go out and make a trade for it, not even a number two like a Joe Ryan or something, but if they go out, get Alcantara from Miami, and I know he's, you know, his value is a little bit down now. I don't know what kind of package that looks like, but you go out getting a guy like that, Fitz is absolutely the guy that gets out of the rotation. And then it's, you know, Crochet, Bayo, Giolito, Buehler, Alcantara, or whatever iteration you want to put in there. But that spot has been kind of patty cakes between Fitz and Dobbins. At times, Dobbins looked really good. I think we all agree on this crew that we like sort of his approach, his attitude. He likes to attack the zone. He's not afraid of hitters. But at times that gets him in trouble. And then he's had a little bit of an injury bug this year. Richard Fitz, same thing, had a little bit of an injury thing, got rushed back, wasn't ready, had to be, you know, sent down again, took his time. Now he's come back and the velocity is great. The stuff is pretty good. But again, a lot of the pitches that he got burnt on tonight were that breaking ball that he just left in the zone. I mean, the Kepler home run, I was listening to the radio broadcast, but Fleming said it was right down the middle, said it was just a hanging slider and Kepler just crushed it.
So, and Jason, when he wasn't leaving it in the zone, it was in the dirt. Like,
yeah,
he just couldn't locate it at all.
Yeah. So it's either just a hanging breaking ball or it's non-competitive. You can't have that. So that's where I wouldn't mind if they went out and got not a number two, but just go get someone that, you know, has a better arsenal of pitches that you feel comfortable that, you know what, they're not going to get burnt in the first couple of innings. With Fitz and Dobbins, you're seeing the inexperience and you're seeing the lack of put away stuff. A lot of Fitz, the damage that was done against him was on two strikes. He just doesn't have that put away pitch yet. Dobbins really kind of doesn't either. They both rely on establishing the fastball and trying to get guys to chase. That works great in AAA. That works great against the Colorado Rockies and the Washington Nationals. It's not going to work against the Phillies. So that's where if they do decide to go starting pitching, even a guy like Alcantara, who, yeah, he's had an up and down year, he can give you more options there because he does have put away stuff. He just has to put it all together. And maybe you get him out of Miami, you bring him here with Andrew Bailey. You know, Bailey's actually done pretty well this year, I think. Maybe that helps. So I wouldn't blame him for doing that at all.
The answer isn't likely going to come internally at this point. I mean, I had some degree of confidence that Tanner Houck would be back in some sort of a role, whether that was starter. I think that's what they were hoping. I kind of like him better in the pen, but he's been shut down again. And it's looking less and less likely we're going to see him again for the remainder of the year at all. And if he needs work done, whether it's surgery, whatnot, I hope they do it. I don't want this to turn into another Cutter Crawford situation. That would be terrible. So hopefully that happens. The other guy internally that many of us thought could be viable is Kyle Harrison, who continues to get knocked around down in AAA. I don't think he's made a start yet. At least I just tried to find one and I couldn't since the break, but not a guy you're going to get enough looks at before the deadline to try to determine whether or not he could hold down that number five spot.
And one thing I don't want to hear is I don't want to hear the name Patrick Sandoval. If they go through the deadline and they don't add any starting pitching and it's, well, Patrick Sandoval's starting to throw from 60 feet. No, I'm not doing the James Paxton, Patrick Sandoval thing all over again. Like, absolutely not. So, because I don't trust it. I'm sorry. I don't trust it. I think that, you know, we were hearing in April and May that, oh, Sandoval's making great progress. Like, he's ahead of his timeline. It's like, yeah, we've heard this story before. You told us this with James Paxton too, and that never came to fruition. So they told us that even with a guy, a reliever, Michael Fulmer, who they're like, oh, Fulmer's like, he's been tearing it up. He's going to be a big part of this bullpen. Yeah, not so much. He's gone now. So I don't want to hear that. One thing I did want to highlight. So, Mark, you mentioned that Christopher Sanchez had 11 ground balls tonight. Is that correct?
I believe it was 11 ground balls, and then he induced another ground ball, which was basically a fielder's choice.
Okay, so 11 or 12
of those.
Wasn't
basically, was a fielder's choice, yep.
Yeah, so he almost had the same amount of ground balls that he did strikeouts.
Right.
And the only damage you did on him was a Ref Snyder solo home run. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just highlights this offense. Again, it's the approach. We talked about it last night. We don't have to harp on it too much. Terry, I'll let you have your take on it because you were on the show last night. But their offensive approach stinks. And when you go up against a guy like this, yeah, you go up against a guy like Sanchez, it shows. Like, you know what he is. He throws a lot of sinkers, he gets a ton of ground balls, and he's got the stuff to strike you out. And if you're a smart team, you might be able to get to him. Again, might be able to. He is really good, to his credit. This team, with the way they approach it, as Mark said, swinging out of their ass, every guy just going up there hacking. We were off air, and Mark mentioned it, Roman Anthony tonight, just like swinging like Tristan Casas, just swinging out of his shoes, which, you know, and everyone was praising his walk rate.
At different pitches. It was the same swing.
Yeah.
At a fastball outside, at a breaking ball inside. It was the same swing, stepping out, hips flying out, swinging as hard as he could, and he got the golden sombrero today. So there you go.
Yep. No, it's a problem. It is.
I keep calling this team a platoon dynasty. That's what Alex Cora loves. This is heaven for Alex Cora. How many hits do you think Romy Gonzalez has in his last 18 at bats?
Two.
One.
Zero.
I was trying to be generous. Yeah.
Zero.
Me too.
Rob Ref Snyder, probably due to tonight, excuse me. Usually I don't stutter. Numbers have been slipping. I mean, he's had a pretty quiet month. Maybe he gets it together, but the home run kind of, maybe he was due, but he just hasn't been his typical self for the last 30 days or so. We did very well against two last place teams, and I think we caught the Tampa Bay Rays at the right time to help sustain that momentum that we had. And now we're facing our second first place team in a row. And you know, which version of the Red Sox is real life? Okay. It's probably not the last place, you know, teams. Those performances aren't what the Red Sox are. And it wouldn't be unfair to say that, you know, we shouldn't be crushing first place teams right now. But here's the real bad news. If you just go to the middle ground between the last place teams and the first place teams and you find that median, it's still not good enough. This team is just not that good. It's not going to be built for, you know, a deep October like what we need. There was a report today, or maybe it was quotes on the Mass Live podcast, that John Henry expects the Red Sox to be playing baseball this October. Now, we're a split crew on how we feel about John Henry in terms of what he says and what he really means. But I believe playing baseball in October is important to John Henry. I don't think they want to field questions all winter long about how the Red Sox missed the playoffs for, I think it's the sixth time in 7 years, something like that. So I don't know how you do it I've said all along, Breslow needs to have, he needs to be the executive of the month. He needs to pull these awesome trades out of left field. I don't think any of us are expecting Joe Ryan, but you know, you could do something cool. You can acquire a starting pitcher based on metrics that could be a difference maker going down the stretch. And maybe if you part with Abraham Toro, you might have to part with one of Rob Refsnyder or Romy Gonzalez to get, you know, to get that impact bat somewhere in your 3-5 hole. If those can get done and we have an honest effort this year, yeah, maybe we can play postseason baseball, but I don't see it with this team. And as you guys were just alluding to, with the offensive approach, and I'll add the bad defense into that, I don't know that Cora's leadership is going to get us there anyway.
Yeah, he can't be moping around the second half this year. And Terry, to your point, I heard that report about John Henry, and I think it's part what you said, which is he doesn't want to deal with the questions and the, well, what are we going to do now? You know, we haven't made the playoffs in X amount of years. I don't think he wants to hear it. I also think, obviously, not having playoffs at Fenway Park affects his pockets. And, you know, he wants to get those crowds in there. And who was it? Jules on the chat. No more rumors. Notify me when something is done. I hear that. I mean, today I read an article from Jackson Roberts from Sports Illustrated. And now, Terry, is Bubich your guy? Did you mention him?
That would be Nick the Voice. He's bought a ton of stock in Bubich.
Okay, because that was perhaps
rightfully so.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think the word that Roberts used was the Red Sox are sniffing around Kansas City. I mean, look, he's owed $1 million for the rest of this year, and he's got obviously half of this year, all of next year in control, so he wouldn't be a rental. I mean, you're going to give up a ton for him. I don't know if he's a guy who you want to extend, but you know, that's something I heard. I also heard the Josh Naylor rumors are kind of heating up a little bit too, but again, you know, no more rumors. We talked about it yesterday. You got an off day on Thursday, correct? I believe.
Yes, Thursday is an off day.
So it's like, yeah, Wednesday. Start hitting the phones, Craig. Start hitting the phones. Make it happen. Make something happen on Thursday. Because now, you know, we've just lost two series in a row. And we're going to face the Dodgers. And that doesn't look, you know, that's a terrible matchup as well. So it's like, don't wait for the market, someone else to set the market. Like, go out there and crush it and be aggressive and start this thing instead of sitting back and waiting.
Here's the bad news on Josh Naylor. Number one, he's a lefty. Number two, he doesn't have the worst numbers against lefties. I mean, he's a 259 hitter with a 300 on base. But this season alone, and these are all this season's numbers, actually, not his career numbers. So 259 average, 300 on base. He's only hit two home runs versus lefties. So not the guy that's going to bring the balance that I would like to see at that position. Would it be an upgrade over Toro and Romy? Sure. But I don't know. I want Eugenio Suarez, and I don't care if he's ever played first base. That's my guy.
I'm with you on Suarez because you mentioned Josh Naylor. Another name that popped up recently is Tyler Soderstrom from the soon-to-be Las Vegas Athletics. And at first I was like, ooh, I like that. He's 23. He's a former first-round pick. He was a catcher they converted into a first baseman. I know he's a left-handed hitter, but I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. Let me go look up his splits. in his career, he has only 30 home runs in his career. Again, hasn't been playing Major League Baseball that long. He has one home run against lefties. The other 29 come against righties. And he's a 223 hitter against lefties, as opposed to, sorry, I just had it up, as opposed to 235 against righties. So he's not a high average guy, but he's got some pop. He's young, but again, converted to a first baseman, so it's not his natural position. But I like that that name is being connected. I like that they're looking at guys like that, and they're trying to look at, frankly, stupid teams. Who can we fleece? Who's stupid enough to give us a guy that they don't deem valuable or that they don't have room for that we can take and make into a big part of our lineup? And part of that idea came tonight just listening to the EEI broadcast. Like, Fleming brought up the fact that Christopher Sanchez was traded to the Phillies from the Rays because the Rays had a 40-man roster crunch and they didn't want to put him on there. And this was shortly before the pandemic year, but they were like, yeah, no, just you can take him. And they took back some outfielder, Curtis Meade, who hasn't done anything with the Rays. And look at what the Phillies got. They got a Cy Young contender. So that's what I want Breslow doing. Like, you don't have to go get Joe Ryan. You don't have to make the big blockbuster trade at the deadline and pay too much for someone that, you know, is either a rental or that you're not invested in long term. But can you get creative? And, you know, maybe a guy like Soderstrom is on that cusp of being creative. Like, look, he's 23. So the splits are what they are, but maybe they see, hey, if he plays more against lefties, he can hit them. And, you know, the Athletics, the people at the Athletics are too stupid to notice that because it would, you know, kind of fit their profile as a franchise. So I don't know, maybe do something like that. Maybe go find your own Christopher Sanchez somewhere. That's what I want Breslow doing. Again, you're supposed to be one of the smartest guys in the room. You're supposed to be a very good evaluator of talent. So you don't have to make the blockbuster. Just do something smart that at the time we're going to sit here and even on this podcast, we go, oof, okay, that's a weird name. I've never heard of this guy, but okay, we'll see what happens. And it turns out to be great. And at the end of the season, we're going, wow, we were ready to fire Craig Breslow in June. And now we're wrong. Now, you know, he's proved us wrong. That's what I hope will happen. But I also feel like, I don't know, that deal's either not out there or he's too scared to make it. And that's what I worry about.
You know, I was just thinking during the broadcast, you know, they showed a shot of Dombrowski up in one of the suites in Fenway. You call it the owner's suite. That's where Breslow hangs out. I don't know what they call it in Philly, but he was up there. A guy that's almost 70 years old, a baseball lifer, just doing what he does so much better than any other executive out there in 2025. And I just got to thinking, you know, you look at his career, he's just doing what he's always done. You know, he won a World Series with the Marlins in 1997. Went to the World Series twice with the Tigers. Unfortunately, they didn't get it done. Had great teams both times, but lost to a couple other great teams, the Cardinals and eventually the Giants. Won the World Series with the Red Sox and came up a little short with the Phillies, but they were the Cinderella team that not many people thought, even as recently as 3 weeks before that World Series, that they would ever be playing in it. And they got there and they've been a playoff mainstay ever since. So that's five times Dombrowski has led a franchise to the World Series, doing what he's always done. And, you know, we just kicked around a bunch of scenarios, you know, with Breslow and pitching and position players and whatnot. And the Red Sox have just tried so hard on and off for the last 15 years to try and reinvent baseball. And have they ever come close? No. And the better part of the last 15 years, the best part in that 15-year window, were the Dombrowski years. So I don't know if Breslow's the guy. I'm definitely not a Breslow guy. I think there's a slight chance if this season does go sideways. I would say it's less than 50%, but I think they could part ways with Craig Breslow. And I keep saying it was a science project from the beginning, and he's crushed it on the pitching side. You know, normally we're screaming for an ace in July. We're not doing that this year because he's done a good job in that regard, but he hasn't done a good job with the lineup, and he hasn't been a good leader, you know? And I think, you know, we can put more of the Devers blame on Devers, or we can put it on Breslow, but he was still a huge player in that and how it went sideways. So I don't know, but I'm just sick of all the creativity. I'd rather just get a little bit more traditional at this point.
Yeah. The only thing I would have to say about that is, you know, I have no problem with them saying, all right, you know, Breslow, you know, you weren't able to build, you know, to your point, you know, a lineup, right? And guys are playing out of position and the Devers fiasco and all that. But the only thing I would caution is that he was like, what, the 11th or 12th guy or whatever it was that they even spoke to. So if you're gonna pull the trigger on him, you better have your ear, you know, someone else's ear, and be like, all right, we're going to do this ahead of time, because otherwise it's going to be just like it was before you had Breslow, where no one wants to interview because you know, what are you going to fire me after 2 years? I'm going to move my family to Boston. I'm going to invest all this time and this effort into this. And if things don't go well, you know, immediately. So that's my only concern about that. Again, I think that, to your point, Terry, you know, he got Crochet, he got Bregman, more on Bregman in a second, but I think he's capable of it. But, you know, like we're all sitting here waiting, you know, I think this trade deadline is going to define him. Now, will it get him fired? I'm not sure. But I would just hope that if there's a replacement there, that it's already in place. But I have a question for you guys about Bregman, because here's the deal. Great leader, great defense, puts the bat on the ball, unlike a lot of these other guys. He had a hit tonight, I believe. But is his base running right now? Now, I know he's hurt, so I'm not accusing him of dogging it. Everyone knows he's, you know, when he hits a ground ball to the shortstop, he's at like 60% going down that line. But there have been times, I think yesterday's game was one of them, where, you know, anyone else would have scored on a base hit. Bregman has to pull up to third. He's pulled up on a couple of grounders. You know, that one in the hole, Jason, I don't know if you saw that, if you were in traffic, but there was that one that he hit in the hole, and the guy made a play on him because he just can't run. And I mean, do you give him more days off? Is that, what do you guys think about that? Because I'm like, yeah, you know, I know he's hurt, but also like, but at least he's getting the bat on the ball.
So I'll say this in defense of Bregman. Yeah, his running, I don't want to call it a problem, because he was never a runner to begin with, right? He's always just been kind of a average to below average base runner. He's not going to steal bases. If he's going to score from second to home, it's got to be a deep single or a gapper. That's just who he's always been. He's never been a fast guy. I'll give him credit for saying that, hey, I know this team is struggling offensively, especially now that a big power bat is out of the middle of the lineup. I'm going to forego my rehab assignment, and I'm going to come right back. Because you know who didn't do that was Tristan Casas. He's the antithesis of Tristan Casas, who took, what, all 21 days or whatever the amount allotted that you're allowed for a rehab assignment. He took every single day. And
he let us know how much pain he was in.
Yep. And with the mental swings, the dry swings, and then, I'm still not feeling right. Meanwhile, the team was spiraling last summer while he was out. And would he have made a difference? Probably not. But he was still a big presence that was out of your lineup. Bregman at least said, you know what? This team has a chance to make the playoffs. I don't need the rehab assignment. I'm going to come back. And you know what? I can't run out ground balls. That's just going to be the reality. But if I can hit a double, or if I can start hitting home runs again and provide some offense, I'll do it. And it stabilizes the third base position and stabilizes our infield defense. I'll do it. So, yeah, it's frustrating at times where you see a play like that, like tonight, the one you mentioned, where he probably, if he was healthy, could he beat it out? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I'm just glad that he fought to get back. And he said, you know what? Just, they need the offense. They need me in there. You know, I don't want to go on a rehab assignment for 2 weeks while they have a really tough stretch in their schedule. So I'll go back in there. And yeah, if I hit the ball on the ground, it's going to suck. I'm not going to be able to beat it out. But if I can hit it into the gap, or if I can hit it over the wall, even better. So I'm not going to get on Bregman too much. I think that I admire him more for coming back quickly and not milking the rehab assignment like some of the guys on this team like to do.
The interesting thing was we were winning without him, you know, and granted, like I highlighted, that it was a lot of bad teams we were playing, but I don't know. I mean, you can't say that he's made a big impact on the field since he's been back. So I don't know what the smart thing is to do. Meyer was giving you probably better defense than even Bregman would give you fully healthy at third base. And we'll see. I mean, the one thing you can't deny is his impact on guys like Meyer, Anthony, you know, and some of the younger guys. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with him, but it's, and Jason, you alluded to it, and I think you guys talked about it last night. I forget who hit that ball to right, but I knew there was a runner on first, and I'm like, oh, well, he's headed home. He's got to be rounding third. And then, oops, it's Bregman. Oh, he's only halfway to third. You know, so just kind of, you know, just trucking along out there. And so I don't know what you do with him and how potentially negatively he can hurt this team, because he looks like he's a long ways off. He doesn't look like he's two off days from being, you know, 90% instead of 50% like what he looks right now.
And that's what I was going to ask you guys. If the schedule was reversed and they were playing the Rockies and the Nationals right now coming out of the break, do you think Bregman would be on a rehab assignment?
I don't think he'd be on a rehab assignment, but they would have just extended the, you know, the stint on the injured list. Someone, I can't remember who it was, if it was Nesson or EEI, but they have pitching machines now that will throw you sliders and they'll throw you changeups and all of that. So rehab assignments, I'm sure they are productive and helpful, but I don't know that they're as critical as they used to be.
By the way, those machines are like $30,000. It's ridiculous, but they do everything. Yeah. And I'm not trying to get on Bregman either, but, and Terry, you just kind of described it when I was like, all right, here comes a run. And then they pan to Bregman. I'm like, ah, like, not like, you know, kind of like, oh, I wish we could have scored the run, but you know, it's Bregman and he got a hit. He got on base. I've, you know, it's okay. But no, I'm not trying to get on him, but you know, it's just one of those things. It's another thing that we have to kind of deal with. And those, you know, that little thing, you know, gets amplified when you're swinging out of your boots and you're not making contact and you're not doing, you know, look at the Phillies tonight, man. They were stealing bases. They were playing aggressive and they were playing exciting baseball. And, you know, the Red Sox just sit there and wait for the 2-run homer or the 3-run homer and they don't change. You know, it's like a football team going into the locker room at halftime being down by, you know, 27 points and being like, yeah, like, you know, get some water, boys. Like, we're rolling it back out there. Same game plan. Let's go. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, not only does Cora not make adjustments from game to game, it seems like, or from pitcher to pitcher, like, is he incapable of making it? Like, is it legal for him to make in-game adjustments? I mean, come on, dude.
It's fair. And he's been questioned all year on it, and he deserves it. I had a problem with a little bit of the lineup tonight. Like, you've got a tough lefty on the mound. You take out Abreu and you put in Yoshida. I know Abreu has had his struggles against lefties, but Yoshida has never hit lefties. His whole thing, when he came back, when Yoshida was ready to hit again, the whole thing was, well, he can hit righties really well. Yeah, because he can't hit lefties. We know this. Abreu, at least, every now and then, he can run into one and hit it over the fence, which, again, yeah, again, that's their offensive approach. That's all they can do, but it might have helped you tonight. You sit both him and Duran. Duran, I sort of get. You know, like, if it's Duran for Ref Snyder, fine. That makes sense. Ref Snyder hits lefties, and he provides you your only offense tonight. But Yoshida over Abreu? And I know it's not quite apples to apples. I know Yoshida DH'd, Abreu being in the field, whatever. But that makes no sense to me. Like, Yoshida should not be a priority right now. Abreu and Duran, those guys need to be a priority. Anthony needs to be a priority. Even Marcelo Meyer needs to be a priority. And it's just, again, it was another Alex Cora. Like, I said it last night. I said, they got a tough lefty on the mound. Get ready for a stupid lineup. And it was kind of a stupid lineup. And they scored one run, and it was a measly effort.
The platoon dynasty. That's what it is.
It's so true. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's probably not going to change tomorrow, because guess what? They got a tough lefty on the mound for the Phillies. So let's get into that. Let's start to break down tomorrow's matchup. This is a ESPN game. If you, again, don't want to listen to Obi for a night, this is your chance to do that again. So 7 p.m. at ESPN. For the Red Sox, they've got Lucas Giolito going on the mound, and he's going up against Jesus Luzardo, who's been pretty good for the Phillies this year. He's been a little up and down. ERA is a bit high, but a big strikeout guy, likes to throw a lot of fastballs. So a little bit different than what we saw in Christopher Sanchez tonight. But Terry, I'll start with you. How are you feeling about that matchup tomorrow?
I think they have a better shot at him than they did tonight against Sanchez. The Angels got to Luzardo for four runs. Start before that, right before the break, Luzardo pitched very well over seven scoreless innings against the Giants. And then he only lasted two innings against the Cincinnati Reds three starts ago for five runs. So if you want the big night from Romy, another big night from Ref Snyder, perhaps he's the guy to do that. And if the Red Sox don't, and Luzardo shuts them down, it'll obviously be a sweep. We'll have lost five out of six. So, and you're probably catching the Dodgers at the right time. Maybe. I mean, they're not playing well, but who knows what we'll do. We're not going to be facing Yamamoto or Glasnow. But yeah, we're in the tough stretch here. And I don't know. I think I'm going to take the Phillies tomorrow. But I think they have a better shot tomorrow than they did tonight.
I think regardless of Luzardo, Randy Clemens in the chat, just put up there, month of July, 5.93 ERA. I don't think that matters with this Red Sox team unless they change their approach. I think they're just going to keep doing the same thing. Like you said, Jason, he's a strikeout guy, and the Red Sox strike out. Cheers to them. They once again went over the 8 strikeouts per game average today, so congratulations to them. It's just infuriating to watch. It's boring to watch. And here's the other thing. I don't know if you guys noticed this. They take good pitches and they swing at bad pitches, which is, it's like, sometimes it's like watching a youth league game. It's just so bad. So yeah, I'm going, I think the Phillies are going to sweep them tomorrow. Nothing about tonight's listless, uninspired, offensive approach makes me think that they're going to do anything different than they did tonight.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way. I hate that I'm leaning that way. The only thing I'll say about Lizardo, yes, he strikes out a lot of guys when he's on. He also walks a lot of guys. His whip is 1.43. So he definitely gives up a lot of walks, gives up a lot of base runners. Now, this is where it's on Cora. I want Roman Anthony in the lineup tomorrow. And I guarantee you Alex Cora is going to sit him because he played two games in a row and he had the golden sombrero tonight. Struck out four times against a lefty. So Alex Cora is now going to look at him and say, you can't hit lefties, you're sitting. So Duran should be back in. Abreu should be back in. But I think Yoshida is going to be right back there at DH. So Roman Anthony, who is one of your better, more patient hitters in general, tonight was bad, but in general, he's pretty patient. He'll probably be on the bench tomorrow. Romy should play. Ref Snyder probably won't. But again, like, this is where I worry about Cora. Like, he gets so in his head about lefties, and I just think he's going to put out a stupid lineup. Narvaez hopefully gets a day off. Connor Wong will probably be in there, so that's going to be a little bit of a minus. I know. Yeah, it's. I feel the same way, Mark. Like, I want Narvaez getting rest because he's obviously exhausted, but that means Connor Wong. Ugh. So, unfortunately, I don't have confidence in the lineup tomorrow. Giolito, I think, will pitch okay. I don't think Giolito is going to get lit up. I think he'll be fine. I think we've seen he's kind of turned a corner here. But all it takes is one bad inning. One bad inning with some bad defense. Maybe Connor Wong gets hit with catcher's interference tomorrow. We get the trifecta on that. Yeah, already broke his pinky doing it this year, so why not? Yeah, do it again. So I don't have a lot of confidence. I do think the Phillies will sweep them tomorrow. Hopefully it's not as embarrassing of a game, but yeah, I don't think the Red Sox are going to pull it out. I think that they just don't have the firepower right now, and I think their offensive approach against a team like this that can pitch like this just doesn't work. So unfortunately, I think the sweep is coming tomorrow. Hopefully the day off Thursday, they can kind of reset. I think Terry's right. Maybe they're catching the Dodgers at the right time. That'll be an interesting series this weekend. So we'll see how it goes. But either way, we'll be back with you tomorrow night after the Phillies game to break everything down. Hopefully they pull out a win, but we'll see what happens. Until then, everyone enjoy the rest of your Tuesday night. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.